Hi, welcome to another episode of the India Independent Films Podcast, where we talk about films and film writing. I have with me Rahul Desai, critic for the Film Companion and writer for other publications. We had a podcast about 4 or 5 years ago, but because of some travel and scheduling, we couldn't conduct. And of course, there was the Mami Film Festival as well. So we are back after like 5 or 6 weeks. So I think there was Mami in between. So we'll start with a little bit about that. So Rahul, how was your Mami experience? I know you were busy there. So let's talk about that first.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, glad to be back after a while. Mami, I was traveling before that. I was on holiday. And my thinking was that, you know, I'm back in time for Mami. And, you know, I'll be able to attend the whole festival. And it'll be great because I'm just going to arrive 3 days back before Mami. So in my head, I'd calculated it perfectly. And I could, you know, continue from where we left off like 3 or 4 years ago when Mami was actually a physical edition. So I did that. I came back. But what I didn't account for is that as soon as I landed, I had to immediately, like, start working, do 3-4 reviews that week in 2 days. There were web shows, there were films. So regular business, basically. Not complaining about that. But I got my timing awry because I had to start on Wednesday that week. So when Mami started by Friday, I was already a little jet lagged, very short of sleep. And I also had, I was involved with Mami as a curator this year. So I had to also conduct a bunch of Q&A sessions and press conferences for the short films that we had chosen. So it was a very different Mami for me. It wasn't the usual experience. I was very happy to catch up with a lot of my colleagues, friends that we've been, you know, we've not seen each other for years now because of the pandemic. And in that sense, it was a nice experience socially. It was a good reminder of what we were missing. But unfortunately, I didn't catch as many films as I'd like to. Like, usually I used to catch like 13 7 days, which was like an averaging of 4 a day. This time I caught only 29 days. And, you know, a lot of it was, of course, there's a lot of travel involved. The venues had changed. Bandra, the Ambani Center, the NMAX Center was the center this time. So it's far away for a lot of us. So timing the whole thing wasn't as convenient as earlier. But I did manage to catch almost all the big titles that I've been looking forward to watch from Cannes and Venice and Berlin. The ones that we were aware of. And I don't know how I survived the festivals because we were all watching it together. We hardly would sleep at night. We'd mostly catch up with people late at night, go out for dinner, drink. Meals were all over the place. It's a typical festival experience. There were times when I was sitting in a screening and the person next to me, a stranger next to me, would look at me in shock because my stomach was growling. You know, because I hadn't eaten for like, I hadn't eaten a meal till 6 p.m. and I didn't realize it because I was running from one venue to another. And there were not enough places to catch enough time, to eat anything, actually. So it was all over the place. My body still hasn't recovered. It's been a few days since it's ended. I'm back to, you know, regular service. But just yesterday, I was doing a podcast with Uday about Mami, about our experience of Mami and the films we watched. And this was, he had a considerably more prolific festival than I did. He watched more films. He came in fresher, even though he did fall sick for a day. But I think it's a miracle that I'm still standing right now.
Yeah, got it. Since, you know, you already have another podcast coming on Mami, so I'll ask just 2-3 questions on this. Did you see The Buckingham Murders?
Yeah, so the plan was to watch The Buckingham Murders because it was the opening film of the festival. And it was preceded by the opening ceremony on Friday. And I had just, like, I had totally planned to attend it. The movie was supposed to start by 9:45 or 10. But because things kept getting delayed, the ceremony took a while. And I hadn't eaten for 12 hours. I chose to go eat dinner instead of watching the opening film because I wouldn't have survived that film. So I missed it. I was very much looking forward to watching it. Couple of people I was sitting with stayed back for the film. Brave people, because the film got over at 1:30 in the morning. But it was a crazy opening. Films are always very crazy, you know. There's no schedule, no timing. So unless you really have to cover it, which we could not because there's an indefinite embargo. I don't know why that is. Earlier, I used to cover the opening films of festivals, the Anurag Kashyap films and the Vasan Bala films and Aligarh also for that matter. But now there was no such compulsion, so I missed it.
And did you get to see, I know you were watching, you had to watch Tejas that day as well.
Yeah, that was the favorite day.
And then how was the, like, Kennedy? Did you get to see Kennedy?
I miss most of the big Indian titles because my logic is that I eventually have to write about it when it drops on a platform or it comes in theaters. So because I was not covering the festival as a journalist and I was more involved as a programmer, I decided to skip a lot of the Indian, and they had massive crowds. Like, the lines were crazy. They had repeat screenings. The hype was unreal for all these films. Very good for them. Kennedy and Agra and so many other films were playing. I skipped those films to watch the films that I wouldn't usually get to watch on the big screen, which is the World Cinema titles.
Hi. You know, whenever I speak to somebody just after a festival, the feeling they typically mention is that, you know, they loved it, but now they want to go back to that, a little bit of that relatively easier viewing. Do you feel that as well?
So that's, there's some kind of withdrawal after the festival because I didn't have that hectic a festival in terms of movie watching. There were times I was trying my utmost best to stay awake even during good films, because I was so physically not ready for the festival. So because of that, I think this time, you know, I don't mind going back to normal existence right now. Like, everyone's left and I'm alone again and watching films, like reviewing stuff every week. So yeah, I'm sort of relieved physically to go back to this. In fact, I couldn't handle the 9-day festival. In my head, it was still the 7-day festival. So I watched movies only for 7 days. I only watched one on the last 2 days. Earlier I remember it used to be a lot of withdrawal symptoms. I wanted to go back to that, watching 4 films a day and coming back and, you know, waking up in the morning, going again. And films and days used to pass by in a blur. But right now, I think maybe I've gotten older. Maybe movie watching habits have changed because of the pandemic. Maybe my patience runs thin. My mind was wandering a lot during films this time. I don't know why that is. It's probably the year that I think I've had or a lot of us have had. So I wasn't as focused as I normally am during a film festival. I guess I'm fine. I don't feel any withdrawals this time of the festival getting over. I'm actually glad to be in a normal space right now.
Yeah. Okay, and then finally, my question on Mami, like, tell us about curation. You know, I know there is jury, there is awards, but what do you do as a curator for a festival?
So I was one of the non-feature curators this year. The three of us. I was one of. I think the section came later on. I don't think they were planning to have a South Asia short film section, which is non-feature. But eventually, there were so many submissions from all over diaspora and all over the world from Indian filmmakers that I think they brought on curators. In August, which was pretty late compared to the features short films. So there were three of us, and between us, I think we had to go through around 450 non-features, which means any film less than 60 minutes, 450 or so in like less than 2 months, in like 40 days, 45 days, which was quite a stretch. Again, that also led to a lot of fatigue by the time the festival started, because I was also working on holiday because I was mentoring for the Young Critics Lab. So I did one of the sessions when I was abroad. But the curating was particularly hectic, but it was very rewarding because this time the good thing that Mami did is they opened it out to South Asia, not just Indian films. So I watched some of the best films from all over the world, like Indian filmmakers from Europe and US. The diaspora is one thing, but we got a lot of wonderful submissions from Nepal and Burma. There were at least 2 or 3 selections from Burma, from Myanmar. A couple of very good films from, I think, from the Middle East, even from Sri Lanka. So it was really nice to see different, like, such a diversity of voices. So eventually we had to cut down those 450 shots. So between three of us, I think we had to watch a total of 700 or 650 shots. And the rule was that any film should need to be watched by at least two of the three curators. So it was divided like that. And, you know, as it often tends to be in such in curating, most 90% of it you can figure out within the first 2 minutes that it's just not watchable. And you have to reject it immediately because there's not enough time. You have to use your instincts as a film critic, as a film person, to figure out whether it's worth watching, because there are some films that are 40 minutes long and you cannot sit through all 40 minutes. So you have to take a call in that sense, give it 10 minutes or so, and if it doesn't work, just like let it go. So I think we had to select. Eventually, it was very difficult to come down to 25 of the best non-features from all over South Asia. And we divided those 25 into four threads, sections. For example, like one was a lonely heart section, which dealt with themes of loneliness and heartbreak and grief. Another was a ship focus section, which was mostly experimental films, very distinct voices, distinct ways of making films. Another was social animal, which was socially relevant topics, like the Anurag Kashyap short was playing in that, Four Slippers. And I think there was one more section also. So these themes we didn't know earlier when we were selecting. We came to a sort of, we came to this much later after selecting the 25 best. So it was, it's a fairly straightforward process in that sense. It's like most other festivals. From the curating I've done in the last few years, because we've been at home and online most of the time, things have changed. Last year I did for the International Documentary Awards, IDA, in the US, and we watched like 60 documentaries or 50 documentaries a person, best documentaries in the world. Most of them were nominated for Oscars. And we had the same, more or less the same process. It's if you spread it out well, it's not that hectic, but this was a bit of a rush. I think we decided very late. So and it was nice to sort of, I had to do the Q&A for those sections. So I had to like moderate panels with like five or six filmmakers, which for me is very nerve-wracking. But in general, once you get a hang of it, I think it's quite rewarding when you hear from the filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you also decide to like vote for the award, like whosoever is winning.
So there was no competition section for the non-features. It was just official selections and four sections. I don't think there was competition for even the South Asian features. For the international features. Normally, World Cinema always had a competition pre-pandemic, Mami. There was always a Golden Gateway for best international film. And this time only, I think South Asian features had a competition section, which Sarbnik Kaur's documentary won Against the Tide, which also won at Sundance earlier this year. So it's no surprise that a non-fiction documentary sort of won the award. But that was the only competition section. That's something they changed from a few years ago because the edition was called Focus South Asia. So I think Mami is going in a direction of representing the best of South Asian cinema, and World Cinema is more of a sidebar for cinephiles like us who want to catch the best of films.
Got it. And then finally, how was the mentoring session? What were the interesting questions did you get from anybody that you would like to share here as well?
Like the mentoring section. So Uday Bhatia and me were doing what we used to do even before the pandemic, before it went online. This time it was entirely online. Thankfully, it was not in person. So it gave me the freedom to sort of travel and even do a section while I was there. So we were guest mentors. The main mentor was Jay Arjun Singh. Mm-hmm. I think he replaced Bhadwaj Rangan this year. And me and Uday did our usual sort of general section of what it is to be a weekly film critic. We have a very fun presentation, which we've been using for a while. We keep updating it every year. And I think we did that particular mentoring session, which is a two-hour presentation. And just to give young critics an idea of what it is to be a professional film critic in Bombay or Delhi or in India from a week-to-week basis. I think we did that for all the 50 participants or 45 participants. And the second session we did was basically an exercise that we, an assignment session, which I did from when I was traveling. We gave them a film to watch the previous evening, and they had to write a review by next morning and turn it in by 8 a.m., which is basically simulating real life circumstances. 500 word review, and they had to turn it in, and within 2 hours we'd get on a call with them and go through their reviews with them and just give them an idea of how they did and, you know, how it went. And these were only for the 12 finalists of the Young Critics Lab. Eventually the winner was decided by Jay Arjun, who's the chief mentor, of course with a little consultation with the guest mentor. So there was a winner chosen and three runners up, I think. And I think they were announced during the opening ceremony of Mami. So we did receive, like, I was very impressed with the batch of like the 12 finalists, because from the way they wrote the reviews, you can tell, you know, that they really have either they've been doing it on the side, which a lot of people do, you know, blogging and, you know, using Facebook statuses and Twitter. But I think a lot of them had a knack for writing, for expressing themselves. And you could tell that they were also following a lot of contemporary critics from the way they wrote. The influences were very strong. And it was quite nice to go through those 12 reviews, because it gave us an idea of how cinephiles or aspiring critics and writers under the age of 25 think, how they express themselves, how they sound at the beginning of a career, hopefully, as compared to later when they can develop their skills and craft. And we got a bunch of interesting questions during the second session, because everyone sort of wanted to know about how tricky it is to navigate this entire sort of weekly exercise of writing like 3 to 4 reviews a week. How, I think the most interesting question for me was how I managed to sort of put myself into the world of one film or show, finish the review in a day, less than a day, and then immediately have to dive into another show, and how you have to treat each show or title independently, each review independently, and not get affected by your feelings for the previous one. Because sometimes by the time I reach a fourth film or fourth review in a week, I'm exhausted. So it tends to show in the reviews that this was not the first film of the week. You tend to sound fresher in the first film, make a little more insight in the first review. So that question was interesting, because it also put into focus this continuity, the emotional continuity of writing through the week and doing multiple reviews a week, and how it is unfair to the films if you watch them third or fourth in a week, by the time you're already fatigued and want to get done with your week and go to the weekend. So it's very difficult to maintain that balance. And I told them very honestly that, I mean, I think Uday gave a very good example of the week where Oppenheimer, Barbie and Bawal released. And I think for a lot of us, Oppenheimer and Barbie had already exhausted us. And by the time we watched Bawal and reviewed it, I think a lot of our frustration was showing in the review. A lot of us, it didn't work for, I guess, a lot of critics. From the way you write, you can tell that you're exhausted by the time you reach, and you cannot watch a film like that and then compare it to the films you've just watched. So it's a tricky thing to navigate in film criticism. So it made me also think.
Mm. And what was the film that they had to
we
write?
We gave a film called Threshold, which is streaming on Hotstar. It's has Nina Gupta and Ajit Kapoor. This was at the beginning of her comeback, 2015. We watched it at Mami, Uday and me. I think we were the only ones who wrote about it eventually. It's by Pushan Kriplani, whose film Goldfish was also playing at Mami this year, whose second film Goldfish, starring Kalki and Deepthi Naval. And I had to moderate a Q&A for that also. So we gave Threshold because we were sure that a lot of them may not have watched it. And that helped.
That's always fascinating to read somebody else's review in that sort of a setting, you know, like somebody who's young and want to give feedback. And
there were so many great points in the reviews that even I hadn't picked up. There were so many great readings of the film, which was lovely to see, you know, because it reminded me of when we started out also.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay, lots of things happening, like lots of busy stuff at Mami. Okay, all right. Now let's come to some general film-related topics. So I thought, you know, we'll talk about some of the most contemporary directors, in the sense like just general talk about some of their films. Some of them may or may not be contemporary, but somebody interesting whose work has been interesting. So first I chose Rajkumar Santoshi. You know, like, of course, he's not made a film. He made one recently, Gandhi Godse something. But, you know, if you look back at his some of his films, Ghayal, Ghatak, Lajja, and then Khaki, how do you see his him as a filmmaker?
I think he was, like, he's always been a very surprising filmmaker for me, for someone growing up in the 90s and then 2000s. Like, there's a certain sense of versatility to the kind of films he used to make, because he made some of the, you know, he made, like, the biggest cult comedy in a very long time. And then he could also make the very socially dramatic, serious films like Ghayal, Ghatak, and you know, bunch of them even in the 2000s. Like, Khaki is still on everyone's mind for how, not only how entertaining it was, but how sort of relevant and progressive it was in its own way. Like, even politically, how relevant it still is. I think some of us revisited a couple of years ago during the pandemic, and it really still sort of stands up. So, and then, you know, he made, even late career, sort of, he made with Ranbir Kapoor, Ajab Prem Ki Gazab Kahani, which was again a big sort of hit in terms of you know, the comedy genre. But so that's the thing about, I feel like, Rajkumar Santoshi. I think like many other veteran directors, he hasn't really updated his voice or craft the way say filmmakers in the West tend to do. Like, you know, your Scorsese's and a lot of them just here fall behind and live on past laurels. And I think he hasn't made a good film for like at least a decade now. And I think he's thinking of making sequels now to his previous hits, which is quite easily a way to get back into, you know, it's like watching Gadar 2 again. Like, it's I haven't seen anything he's made for a long time, but I do revisit his older films from time to time. And some of my favorite non-Shah Rukh 90s films were made by Rajkumar Santoshi. Even the Anil Kapoor film in the early 2000s, I forgot, for which he won National Award, I'm not sure, with Madhuri Dixit, I think he made that Pukar. Film as well. Pukar. Right? That was a great soundtrack. It's one of my favorite films to watch in a theater back then, because I wasn't very keen on watching it, and then I was quite taken by the film on the big screen also. So, you know, he is, again, like, it's very difficult to judge him right now, but I can only say that he was one of the only filmmakers who could sort of work or tell stories on both ends of the genre spectrum, which is something that you can't call. There was no such thing as a Rajkumar Santoshi film per se, because there were some of the most surprising titles that were made by him that you don't associate with him. And then there were the Pukars and the other ones. So I like that about him, but you know, again, I'd still put him in a category of older filmmakers who've sort of fallen by the wayside now.
And you know, like, there was Ghayal, and there's Ghayal 2, which is actually by Sunny Deol. I didn't think we've spoken about it, but you actually wrote a very good review about that film, which was very interesting to me. Like, you know, otherwise it's a film that's been largely forgotten, while Ghayal 1, of course, is still remembered. What did you like? Do you remember Ghayal 2?
Yeah. I remember it very well, because I was very impressed with, first of all, Sunny Deol's sort of, I don't know, for some reason, Sunny Deol, Ajay Devgan, all these old actors from the 90s have a knack for directing action sequences. I understand that about Ajay Devgan, given the family he comes from. But Sunny Deol really, it's very slickly made film. Like, even in my best action sequences piece I did a couple of years ago, I included a chase sequence in Ghayal 2. And I think it represented modern Bombay very well, because it wasn't trying to be fancy about the city we live in. There was a villain who lives in a very Ambani-like structure at Worli. And, you know, it was a very direct sort of takedown of the nexus between politicians and industrialists. And it was a very campy way to do it. And of course, you know, the same sort of protagonist, the same hero comes back after like two decades, and, you know, he's gone through a whole bunch of trauma. And I really liked it because it was a film about youngsters. It was a film about, it was a film about, like, how industrialists manipulate the political landscape and the cultural landscape of city, big cities like Bombay. And it was so blatant that the villain was based on, say, a Reliance kind of industrialist, that I found it quite brave, actually. Maybe Sanidhar went through a bad experience with Reliance early on, and he's just taking out his this thing. And it was the kind of film I'd imagine Shah Rukh making these days. Like, say, like a Jawan. It was more or less like that. Like, it was very simplistic, but very fun to watch and very direct in its criticism of the system. And I like that about that film. I think I still remember big moments from that film, and I would recommend it if anyone's looking to watch a good action, good solid masala action film.
I'm going to watch it sometime because I remember your review even when it had come out that you liked it. Okay. And then, there was this whole, I remember when Rashma Santoshi also made The Legend of Bhagat Singh. Yeah. And at that point, there were three films that had come out, which were talking about the same. I think Rashma Santoshi's was the most critically acclaimed as well as commercially as well. Do you remember that time, or do you
I will never forget that time, because three Bhagat Singh films come. It spoke to the times we lived in. First of all, the sort of very activist rebellious India that was waking up after the 90s, after post-liberalization. So calling back to freedom fighters who represented a certain kind of rebellion and activism. So I found it very amusing when those, I think one of them had Bobby Deol in it. Yeah. And I remember only watching hands down the Rajkumar Santoshi one with Ajay Devgan, because Ajay Devgan was a fairly critically acclaimed actor by then. He had done very serious films also, like Zakhmi and all, and he was known not just as an action hero anymore. So he was doing films with some very interesting directors. So I watched that film, and that was hands down. Like, later on, I watched the Bobby Deol one, and I think there was another one. But I thought it was one of the very rare sort of constrained biopics about, because we've seen freedom fighter biopics for decades in Hindi cinema, and they tend to go a little overboard. But I think they did a very good job of sort of, from what I remember, I haven't seen it in like 15 years, but I think it did a very good job of conveying a sense of legacy and making it speak to the times we live in also. I think it was a very well-made, for its time, very well-made, a rare well-made biopic. And you don't say that often about films like that. Of course, films like Rang De Basanti and all came later, where they were very innovative about how they spoke to the past and how they connected both eras. But I think that was actually a film, Legend of Bhagat Singh is actually a film that eventually, given our track record with biopics, should be spoken about more often. Because after that, you'd think that they would sort of figure out the formula and do a better job. But even Amir failed with Mangal Pandey. So I think Legend of Bhagat Singh is one of the standout films of that decade, at least.
Right. How was Ajab Prem Ki Gazab Kahani? No, of course, Andaaz Apna Apna is the cult. Yeah. Classic. Did it reach that? Because the reason I'm asking is, when it came out, this was this whole marketing hype that it's this Rajkumar Santoshi's back with this comedy. Did that work for you, that film?
That did not work for me. It was Ranbir Kapoor's first hit, I remember, and I did not enjoy. Like, to be honest, like Andaaz Apna Apna also, it took me years to warm up to it. Like, it took me years to sort of view it through a lens of self-parody and satire and whatnot. And I only enjoy it now as an older person, Andaaz Apna Apna. I never used to enjoy it in the 90s itself. Like, for example, Hera Feri, I knew was an instant classic. I used to watch it again and again, and it was great fun. But I never thought that about Ajab Prem Ki Gazab Kahani. I didn't expect it to do so well as well. What it did do is sort of reveal how good Ranbir was, how effortless he was at playing characters across genres. I didn't expect him to be good at the role he did. And even though he did a couple of strange films after that, I think he was the only takeaway from that film for me. The film itself was very forgettable for me. And I revisited it once when I was doing a Ranbir Kapoor list. And though I enjoyed his comic timing in the film, though I enjoyed his lack of vanity in the film, just letting go and sort of almost like he was imitating previous generations of actors or paying ode to his own Kapoor sort of legacy, I don't think the film itself is fun to watch.
Yeah, I don't even remember that except that one song which was Atif. That's just I still remember that song, but apart from that, not a lot. Okay, now of course Rajkumar Santoshi now making Lahore 1947. I don't know what it's going to be about, but Aamir and Sunny. Okay, so now let's move to another director, Ashutosh Gowarikar. Did you get to see Kala Pani?
Oh no, I missed it. I was traveling, but so it's on my watch list. I hope to watch it. He's always, you know, he was an actor before he's a director also. Like, we saw him in a bunch of 90s movies. So very much looking forward to that, because he can't possibly be sort of, I think he's a fairly solid film person in that sense. And he's not a great director right now, but he's always had a sense of screen presence. And that's why he directed his actors so well, even in the 2000s.
Yeah, and then he acted in, of course, Kabhi Haan Kabhi Na, CID, the TV show, Circus with Shah Rukh. So I was just curious. And have you seen Tulsidas Jr.?
No, I haven't seen.
Okay. The reason I asked is because I just found out that it's written by Ashutosh Gowarikar. So I was not aware of it.
Wow. Okay.
He has this writer's credit, and then I don't think he won, but that film won the National Award or something recently. Okay. Now, in his filmography, how is Jodha Akbar? How did you find that film?
Jodha Akbar for me was part of his like 2000s trilogy, where he worked with one great superstar per film. Like, it was Aamir, Shah Rukh, and then of course Hrithik. You know, it's a strange thing because I watched it a couple of years ago again, writing about Hrithik's performance there, and I don't know, but I even though it was very well made, I felt like there was always a sense of competition with Sanjay Leela Bhansali for being the biggest, best larger-than-life filmmaker of that decade. I felt like there's a subconscious contest going on with Bhansali to be known as the filmmaker with the greatest sense of scale, because both of them were making period films in a way, except Swadesh, and both of them were sort of almost competing to be the biggest name in that sense. I don't know if it was in their heads, but it felt like one was reacting to the other. Felt like Jodha Akbar was a reaction to Bhansali's previous films before that, like the Devdas and the others, and I felt like Gowarikar had a very different sense of period drama or aesthetic of storytelling compared to Bhansali, and I felt like he was veering away from his DNA in a film like Jodha Akbar. Even though I enjoyed the performances and the chemistry between them, I think it was, if I look back on it, it felt a little dull. Like, it felt a little, and it's difficult to make films about historical figures, especially so far back, and make them sort of stand out the way visually, at least Bhansali does, the way he goes all out with his aesthetic and does not hold back. But I felt like Gowarikar is more of an actor's director, and the sense of scale we saw later in the 2010s, that, you know, that sense of scale fell away. He lost sort of perspective of how he should go about that particular kind of filmmaking. Jodha Akbar is not my favorite. Like, it's probably my third favorite of the Gowarikars in that decade. And I quite liked Hrithik in that, but I still think he delivered better performances even than that one.
And then this Panipat, do you even remember this?
I barely remember it. It was really forgettable. Like, the thing is, again, you know, he was going on a period spree, and I just it just felt like it wasn't him, you know. It just felt like he was trying too hard, and he should have stuck to his vision, his voice, the way he did with Lagan and Swadesh. I forgot that film as soon as I watched it. Those are not good films. And I don't think he had made a good film in a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, there was Mohenjo-daro and then Panipat and then Khele Hum Ji Jaan Se. None of them have reached that that acclaim. Now, since we talk about Swadesh, Shah Rukh from Swadesh or Shah Rukh from Jawan?
Yeah, that's two very, very different Shah Rukhs. I mean, honestly, like, we all want the Shah Rukh from Swadesh. We romanticize him because that was actor Shah Rukh, right? Like, that was the Shah Rukh we knew, that the artist that whose potential we knew he had, because he went through the 90s straddling that balance between superstar and actor. And he was one of the only ones who could do that. And I very much liked him in Swadesh, and the kind of tone it is, very subdued, very, and same, social speaking, doing the same thing as Jawan did, as you mentioned. But I'm very much enjoying Shah Rukh's action hero comeback, like, or his action hero debut in that sense. Like, this era that he's in right now, I'll be very honest, I'm not that excited about Donkey compared to, say, Jawan or Pathaan or the Virus Spy Universe. I don't know what it is, but I just feel like Shah Rukh's having more fun right now doing what he's doing. And, you know, I feel like he has nothing left to prove. In Swadesh, there were still scenes that I cringe in, because especially towards the end when he's making some very patriotic lines when he goes to NASA and tells them that, you know, I'm going to work back in India, I'm going to leave NASA. The way he delivers those lines is still, there's a bit of hamming in those lines, the way he uses his eyes and his face, and I still cringe at those scenes towards the end of Swadesh. I don't think it was a perfect film, and I don't think it was a perfect Shah Rukh performance, even though a lot of them say it was his best. I don't believe it was. But it was a very, it's the kind of film we should keep in a museum, because Hindi films aren't made like that, especially with big directors and superstars, and being so low-key about a socially relevant drama. We don't do that anymore. We like to shout it out from the rooftops. And I think Jawan is a great example of that. So I'd say, like, I'm very much like, I think I'm team Jawan right now. But who knows down the line, if Shah Rukh sort of returns to his Swadesh roots with his performance in Donkey, who knows?
Right. Yeah, the trailer didn't seem as interesting as I was hoping it to be. Donkey, it reminded me of Bahua Singh, like the way Shah Rukh was acting in that film. But of course, you know, Shah Rukh has a thing to surprise many a time. So we'll see. Although Rajkumar Hirani, I've not liked many of his films, which the reason I asked this, because, you know, it's still Shah Rukh of Swadesh and Shah Rukh of Jawan, so sort of Sin Gowarikar is connected. And then let's move to another filmmaker, Meghna Gulzar. We've spoken about Razi before, but I'll ask about Chapak. Was Deepika the right choice for that film?
I don't know if she's the right choice. I think she was fine. Like, in, you know, the thing is about using, like, actresses known for their beauty in a role like that, is you're making it very obvious that you want the appearance to be front and center in the film. You want the physical disfiguration of an acid attack survivor to be the protagonist of that film. And it tends to stand out when you use an actress known for her beauty, her striking face, her looks. And it was too blatant in that sense. So I don't know. Maybe they needed a big name to put across, to make a film like that. And I get it. It's like using Priyanka for, you know, Mary Kom. But yeah, it's more or less the same logic as that. I don't think if you're really making a true-to-life, authentic sort of drama about an about something or a topic like that, I think using a star like that has its has its strengths and its drawbacks. I don't think it entirely, the film didn't work for me on a writing level. It didn't work for me on a filmmaking level. I think it was too hasty. It was too choppy. It was too angry. And that's not always a good thing. And I think it was too like on your face in that sense. And yeah, maybe she was not the right choice because it's probably the least of her, I mean, least memorable performance of hers in the last like 10 years. Because now when Deepika comes on screen, you're never going to forget it. She has that kind of presence. But I do admire her sort of ambition to do something as something like that. It takes guts to do that as a mainstream Bollywood actress and put your vanity to the side and play a very real life person who's wounded like that. So I think it's in for her great, but yeah, the film did not work for me.
You know, she made Razi, and I think Razi, I don't remember who wrote it, but did Khufiya remind you of Razi at times?
Yeah, yeah, it did. I remember even mentioning it while watching it. Yeah, yeah, it did. And that's the thing. That's where I thought, like, and Vishal Bhadwaj sort of was involved with Meghna Gulzar when he wrote Talwar. And, you know, there's a very vague association in that sense. I was just disappointed with Khufiya because it did not obviously know what kind of film it wanted to be by the end. But yeah, it did remind me of Razi. Razi was more clear-eyed in what it was doing. And that's why it was such a success. And that's why even I liked it so much when I watched it back then. That it had a great central performance as well. Khufiya is... Bhadwaj needs to... I think he needs to work on his current, whatever he's doing right now, he needs to be clear about like the kind of voice, the kind of filmmaking he wants to do.
Right. And have you seen Filhal? Do you remember that film?
I don't. Yeah, I've seen it. I remember seeing it actually, but I don't remember much about the film itself. But I do remember a lot of like when the trailer started dropping or the teaser started, I do remember a lot of white on the screen. A lot of, in some sense, I only remember the brightness of the screen when trailers of that drop. And back then we knew Meghna Gulzar as the Gulzar's daughter, right? Like we didn't look at her as Meghna Gulzar. Right now it doesn't occur to me that she is from that illustrious family. But because she has made films like Razi and Talwar, which is some of the better films of the last decade, but yeah, I'm looking forward to what she does with Sam Bahadur because it does have Vicky Kaushal and I really like the actor. I really like him. I really hope he continues to do films like he's doing.
Yeah, it seems very interesting. The trailer also, and the way he's acting, his eyes. It seems very interesting to him. The reason I asked Filhal because I revisited it like 3-4 years ago, and it was one film where I found like Tabu is not good. She isn't good in that film, like in terms of the acting and the performance, while Sushmita comes out as much better in that film. So which was to me like, okay, you know, when you are kids you don't remember these things, but once you remember, revisit, you just realize this. Okay, now come to another very weird, not weird, like a very controversial sort of like a mixed filmmaker, Palki. Did you get to see Chup?
Eventually I did not watch Chup, even though like I got messages from all over, of course, because you know it's about filmmaking. But no, I did not watch.
Okay. Also, how was Chini Kam?
You know, I quite liked what Balki was doing in the beginning. That, you know, that ad filmmaker instinct of doing something gimmicky was something new for that decade. It was, and he had a very, very clean ad sense of aesthetic, which worked in terms of the filmmaking we were doing then. Because we had just come off the Dil Chahta era, the swanky urban aesthetic sort of worked in that sense. I kind of liked Chini Kam. I liked it, even though it's a very age-old formula of, you know, old man, little girl, and you know, age difference, romance. He had that tagline there. What I didn't know then is Balki is only that. He can't do anything else. As long as there's a tagline for every film, there's a gimmick for every film, where it was age difference there, and it was like the little girl sort of dying there. Apart from that, I didn't mind that film because I quite liked the phase Amitabh Bachchan was in then. I quite liked what Balki was trying to do with Pa also. Some very big leaps of faith there. And I quite liked the equation between Abhishek and Amita, even though it was the most obvious gimmick in the world. But I don't think I've liked a Balki film after that. And I think I dislike him as a filmmaker more than most filmmakers working right now. Because when he... I just see a dishonesty in his filmmaking, an attention-seeking sort of bone in the way he makes his films. Don't think he's made a good film for like more than a decade now. And I'm sure Chup must have, you know, been like the talk of the town because the audacity of a filmmaker to make a film about film critics and take out his sort of... and it sounds actually quite interesting on paper. I had a chuckle when I heard about what it was about. But I do not trust Balki to pull off any gimmick because everything is just that. Like, if there's nothing more than the one-liner.
At least for me, that film didn't work at all. it seemed very very obvious in a sense, and like, there was nothing interesting about it. But apparently, a lot of people liked it, and of course, it was written by Raja Sen, so it's a different writing. People have choices either way. Now, on the other side, there's his wife, Gauri Shinde. She's such a very interesting filmmaker. How was Dear Zindagi?
I've been meaning to watch it again over the last few months. For some reason, I just feel like, because I've sort of woken up to, like on a personal front, I've woken up to like taking therapy and sort of trying to figure out my thoughts, figuring out the phase of life I'm in and how to sort of navigate it. And those were one of the very rare Hindi films that, you know, spoke about how young millennials and, you know, and people within the industry, people doing jobs that are sort of unsettling and very tough to do and long hours, how they lose a sense of themselves and how it's sort of mental health is a big deal in this whole thing. To figuring out yourself is the main step to move forward and evolve. And I think that film, when I watched it, I really liked Alia Bhatt in it, of course. I think it was a very unusual film. It was a very mature film for not just its time, in general in Hindi cinema. And I don't remember a lot of it. I remember moments of it, especially the therapy sessions between Shah Rukh and Alia. It wasn't a perfect film, but I would really like to revisit it now and see what I think about it now. I remember giving it like a fairly decent-ish review, but I also remember that Alia was the best thing about that film. So the film felt lesser than that because of how good she was. But I think Gauri Shinde definitely is a very interesting voice. I really hope she makes more stuff because it's been a while.
Did that age difference bother you, Alia and Shah Rukh? I mean, it wasn't implied, but it wasn't shown directly, but it was implied. But let's say another film comes where Shah Rukh and Alia, does that bother you?
See, in that film, it didn't bother me because it was very obvious a therapist-client relationship, and because she is the person she is and because she's so unrooted in that film, she is obviously falling for the one person, older person who's giving her guidance. It's called daddy issues. We call it every time. And it did feel like the age difference was acknowledged in that film. It did not feel like your typically skewed love story or romance, because it wasn't that. It was, if anything, he was reluctant because of that. And it's also, you know, unprofessional on many levels. That unprofessionalism was implied in the film. And it was a mature sort of theme to deal with. But if I see Shah Rukh and Alia cast together as like a romantic couple, I would not. I think Shah Rukh himself cracked a joke in Jawan about it. Like, I don't think it is... Yeah, like, I don't think it's going to happen. I really hope it does not happen. I can only see them as therapist and client, or I don't know, or something, you know, or mentor and something, or uncle and niece or something like that. The relationship Shah Rukh shares with the women in Jawan, the women team, the five of them, I think that's the relationship he should be sharing with all the actresses of that generation or Alia's generation whenever he acts with them. They cannot be a romantic. I don't think he's as tone deaf as Salman Khan, where he's acting with like actresses like romantically at least 30 years as junior. I don't think Shah Rukh is that person.
Mm-hmm. Nice. The reason I remember Dear Zindagi because there's a very interesting line. He, again, during the therapy, he says, you know, like, why do you always have to choose that difficult path? Like, who's told you to choose that difficult path, that only success comes after choosing difficult path? Which was a very interesting observation, and it took me to DDLJ, where, you know, when Farida Jalal tells Shah Rukh to just run away, and then he says, no, I will take this path, you know, and then again he talks about two paths. My father used to tell me that, and which was to me very interesting, you know, how, like, who's told you to choose that difficult path? Like, why do we have to punish yourself? So it's a very interesting film in that sense. Okay, I think we spoke about some directors. I had one more, but I will ask him for next time. Let's ask about Sanya Malhotra. Okay, first tell me about your favorite performance of hers.
Photograph, without, like, I mean, that's it's just no competition. One of the finest performances in Hindi cinema in the last decade. It's not talked about enough. I cannot overstate enough how she gets that Vilepale Gujarati, sheltered Gujarati girl pat in that film. The body language, the gait, the voice, the shyness, the reserved, and this sort of very sheltered desperation to break out of, you know, that control of her family. And it's a wonderful film, and it's a wonderful performance. And that's where I realized she's a special actress. I really like her. Like, I think she's, I really hope she chooses the best kind of role, because, you know, she tends to do films that sort of satisfy the Bollywood fan in her sometimes more than the artist in her. I think if she does more films that, you know, where she can play author-backed roles, it would be great, because she has such a great face. And by that, I mean such an expressive, such a movie face, that she can do anything she wants. She can play any character she wants. She can play a reserved character. She can play a very over-the-top character. I really like most of her performances, and just realized what a fabulous dancer she is, because I've discovered on Instagram, been seeing her reels, and she's typical Bollywood fan, grown up in the 90s, idolized people like Shah Rukh and Hrithik, and now just, like, she's a very conventional sort of evolution chart in that sense to become this heroine. But the best part of her is that she's not a heroine, she's bigger than that. She's a character in most films, and she can do, she has great talent. I hope to see more of her.
Yeah, she's a great dancer. I think she always makes these very catchy reels and all. And one another thing I found out, she was the one who choreographed this song in Secret Superstar with Amir. Like, one of the songs there. She's choreographed it. Okay. Now, how was Meenakshi Sundareshwar? That film?
Fairly, I mean, I watched it later. I remember traveling when it came out, didn't review it, but then I watched it later. It's hard to watch because it's just difficult to watch Hindi cinema, like, do stuff like that. And when you know an actress like her is sort of, and I know it was talked about a lot, you know, the Tamil accent and the sort of Hindi film, sort of North Indian actress playing a South Indian character. It doesn't work, you know, after a while. The film itself, of course, you know, leaves a lot to be sort of desired. It could have been really sweet, but this entire cross-cultural clash that we need to get over, you know, like, I'd like to see it played like it was in Two States, where Alia did not necessarily sound like a Tamilian character, you know, but her parents were old school and sounded very much traditional in that sense, and were very much the old school sort of fold and conservative sort of. You don't have to make the younger character sound like that, you know, if you really look at how life sort of unfolds around us. So, not a big fan of the film. I also was worried there that Sanya would go a certain direction in terms of acting and do choose roles that make her stand out for whatever reason. But having said that, you know, I'd like to give her a benefit of the doubt.
I think she was okay in that film. It's just that the character of that guy, he was a little too dull to have that pining romance sort of that it didn't come across as that film, okay, you know, that guy he could take, and she was the one sort of driving it. But yeah, it's the music was great, but the film isn't memorable. Now let's come to this another like mixed film. First and last, did you get to see Niyat?
No, I did not watch it.
Okay, because it's built by, made by Anu Menon, so she made Shakuntala Devi. That film?
not good at all. It was the worst example of a mainstream biopic. It's you cannot play the woman card, like just be happy with the fact that there's a great female visionary and that's enough for your film. And that tends to show in the way that a film like that was made. And it's weird because, you know, Anu Menon is also an international name. She's directed episodes of like, I think like big international shows. And when she directs films for Bollywood or Hindi, mainstream Hindi cinema, it's just such a dumbed down, simplified version. It also didn't do justice to Vidya Balan. Though I thought the relationship between mother and daughter, Sanya Malhotra and her, was quite interesting. There were a lot of subtext there. One of the rare films that sort of acknowledges a dysfunctional mother-daughter relationship, especially what happens when your mother, like when a parent is sort of the bigger name and a sort of genius in that sense, and the toll it takes on your personal life. But none of these themes were actually like realized fully, even though the actresses were great, even though the performances themselves weren't like up to the mark. The filmmaking itself was very simplistic. Not a good biopic at all.
How was she in Hit, the first case, Sanya?
Oh yeah, I totally forgot she was there. See, this is what I mean by, you know, making better choices, because like she has, first of all, I'm glad she's around and she has a lot of time to make these choices, but yeah, like you that film was more or less revolving around, like, it was all investigative thriller, so almost a whodunit in that sense, and she goes missing in that film as a character. It was centered around Rajkumar Rao, but it was a very choppily made film, very disorienting, really poor editing, pacing. Something didn't feel right about that film, and even Sanya Malhotra got lost in that whole din. There was not enough of her, of course. She was not used well, but yeah.
And I think you like the Love Hostel.
Love Hostel is a good example of making some. Of course, not many people will watch it, but you need to have something to your legacy eventually, and something to show for all that talent. And I think both of them were terrific in that film. Very good, very good filmmaking. Great themes addressed in it. I just hope, you know, like she makes interesting choices, you know, going forward. I could tell that Jawan is proper fan service. Just the dream of sort of working with Shah Rukh is enough, and that's fair enough. Like, you deserve it if you work so hard to become an actress in like in the current Hindi cinema. So you have to give yourself that leeway, and you could sense the privilege to be on screen with Shah Rukh. So she would have just accepted it in a heartbeat, even if it was one moment or 5 seconds or a cameo or something like that. So it was nice to see her there. I just wish that people, directors start noticing her all-round talent and use her better.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if anybody was in her place, you get a role with Shah Rukh, right? Nobody can judge her for choosing that. She's worked for it, so
yeah.
She deserves it. And now she's coming in Sam Bahadur. So now, and then sort of my last question for today would be like, how is Ludo?
I was just going to mention that because I remember her character very well from that film. And, you know, the character itself was very over the top and like all over the place in that film. But I love the way she sort of essayed it and the chemistry she had with Aditya Roy Kapoor's character in that film. Like, it's a character we've seen many times. And I think Sanya Malhotra brought a very special kind of energy to it. When I first watched it, I was like, oh God, she's overacting. But I think it was required for that particular role. The film itself, the palette was so over the top. It was so typically Anurag Basu. It was such a hot mess, that film. But such a great soundtrack, all the good things we know about Anurag Basu, all the bad things as well. So I thought one of my favorite moments in that film was towards the end in montage when like she returns to Aditya Roy Kapoor on the terrace and his reaction to it. And she tells him that this is how we are going to do, how we are going to live together, even though we are such opposites. I think she did that scene very well. And I there's something about her face. I keep coming back to it, and it's just such a, it's a movie screen on its own, and she can do so much with it. But yeah, that I quite enjoyed that film, and I watched parts of it a couple of times after that.
Got it. Okay, all right. I think we spoke for an hour, so next time I had one or two topics. I mean, I didn't cover Anand L. Rai, but I will think of some other topics.
We have
topics.
An entire podcast for that.
Yeah, so like that was another director I wanted to talk, but I was like, you know, we can continue for that in the next one, and then some other characters. Okay, all right, Rahul, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, and thanks everybody for listening. Hopefully, we'll be back soon. So, thank you.
Thank you.